22 Detroit, Michigan, and other places. The contact is in both code and voice. Space intelligences have said, God provided, man divided. Man has taken this true thing and added to it his own ring. After the period of the Great Influx, science went a long way toward abolishing age-old theological dogma, but it went too far to the extreme and man became bathed in the new glories of the materialistic scientific world. Man on Earth had always delighted in dividing everything. There are continents, nations, states and commonwealths, counties and townships, cities and villages, wards and blocks, churches, cults, sects and isms, races and creeds, classes and clubs, societies and shrines, cathedrals and temples. But the infinite further is one. Earth has been divided up so that instead of man being a brother to his fellowmen, he has set up artificial lines to separate and segregate others different than himself. Man-made boundaries, man-made creeds and ideals, man-made religious groups, man-made doctrine and dogma, man-made, man-made. There is nothing wrong with religion, it's what man has done to and with it that's so pitiful. Science is the twin sister of religion. Truth cannot contradict truth, and there is no religion higher than truth. The worship of the Creator and the study of His laws, causes and effects, of nature and the great powers waiting for discovery within her bosom, all these should be massed into one. Hence, science and religion are one, just as everything. 23 In the Omniverse is one. When Van Tassel said, we must present to science, the religion of science, and to religion, the science of religion, he gave the key for understanding between the two great fields of human endeavor. To many people today, science is the modern savior or messiah. They look to scientists and their discoveries for the answer to all mankind's ills. Recently, reports said that soon we could live forever through the latest discoveries in biological science. What fools these mortals be, indeed! We already possess immortal life. Thousands of spiritually hungry people have come to realize that the facts unearthed by science have not thus far been adequate to satisfy the needs of humanity, and many today are searching for something. Orthodox theology has failed also to satisfy their deep longings, and orthodox science presents only cold, bare materialism to them. There are, of course, many scientists and theologians who are sincere, honest men, working tirelessly to aid men on this planet. But, at the same time, we must remember that all scientists are not men of science, and all theologians are not men of God. Men are most reluctant to give up their secure, comfortable positions and pet theories. Desmond Leslie once said, I'm convinced that the orthodox scientists of today are the counterpart of the orthodox theologians of the Middle Ages. Be that as it may, orthodoxy is the same thing wherever it is found, and it doesn't matter by what name you prefer. 24 To call it. Once in a great while a man comes along, or a woman, and although usually despised by their contemporaries, they manage somehow, by supreme effort, to haul all the rest of lagging humanity behind them, and what we call worldly advancement or progression takes place. In A Flight in Life, Charles A. Lindbergh says, to me in youth science was more important than either man or God. I worshipped science. I was awed by its knowledge. Its advances had surpassed man's wildest dreams. In its learning seemed to lie the key to all mysteries of life. It took many years for me to discover that science, with all its brilliance, lacked only a middle chapter of creation. I saw the science I worshipped, and the aircraft I loved, destroying the civilization I expected them to serve, and which I thought as permanent as the Earth itself. Now I realize that to survive, one must look beyond the speed and power of aircraft, beyond the material strength of science. And, though God cannot be seen as tangibly as I had demanded as a child, His presence can be sensed in every sight and act and incident. Now I know that when man loses this sense, he misses the true quality of life. The beauty of earth, its seasons and its skies, the brotherhood of men, the joy of wife and children. he loses the infinite strength without which no people can survive, the element which war cannot defeat or peace corrupt. Now I understand that spiritual truth is more essential to a nation than the mortar in its city's walls. For when the actions of a people are unguided by these truths, it is only a matter of time before the walls themselves collapse. The most urgent mission of our time is to understand these truths, and to apply them to our way of modern life. We must draw strength from the almost forgotten virtues of simplicity, humility, contemplation, prayer. It requires a dedication beyond science, beyond self, but the rewards are great and it is our only hope. All theology and science will not be done away within the new age. But under the incoming golden dawn, man will acquire a greater concept of creation, free of ancient ritualism and the carried over pagan ideas. Likewise, man will enjoy more radiant health due to the habit of right living and right thinking. Every man will be a scientist, even as space visitors are true scientists, utilizing the forces of the universe in the ever-upward, spiraling climb toward divinity and the Father. The elder brother, Jesus, said, "Know ye not that ye are gods?" Man will wake up to this fact, and will leave the pupil of ignorance, superstition, dogma, orthodoxy, etc., to emerge as a son of God, claiming his rightful place in the divine scheme of things. Man is a co-creator with the Father, but he fails to recognize this great truth. The great scientists of Columbus' time were no less great because they believed Columbus to be a fanatic for thinking the earth was round. The mistakes of yesterday or today only point the way to the greater truth of tomorrow. With each new discovery we gain a greater comprehension of the whole. Everything changes, but change itself. Let that change come. The earth has been waiting a long, long time. 4,000 years ago, Job asked, "If a man die, shall he live again?" This question has been repeated in vain by every generation of men who have since inhabited the earth. Now, space intelligences bring proof of life everlasting, and eternal progression. In Conquest of Fear, Basil King gives us a view of the future world when he says, "Taking Jesus as our standard, we shall work out, I venture to think, to the following points of progress. The control of matter in furnishing ourselves with food and drink by means more direct than at present employed, as he turned water into wine and fed the multitudes with the loaves and fishes. The control of matter by putting away from ourselves, by methods more sure and less roundabout than those of today, sickness, blindness, infirmity and deformity. The control of matter by regulating our atmospheric conditions as he stilled the tempest. The control of matter by restoring to this phase of existence those who have passed out of it before their time, or who can ill be spared from it, as he raised three young people from the dead and Peter and Paul followed his example. 27. The control of matter in putting it off and on at will, as he in his death and resurrection. The control of matter in passing altogether out of it, as he in what we call his ascension into heaven. Yes, it is true that God provided, man divided, but man on earth must go back to the whole which the Creator made manifest unto his creation. Remember the words of Paul, "O Timothy, keep that which is committed to thy trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings, and oppositions of science falsely so called. The truth alone shall make man free, and as Bacon said, truth is the daughter of time, not of authority." Chapter 2. The Grand Man. In the universe of infinite entities and infinite variety, man is found manifesting in many degrees from microcosm to macrocosm. In the theory of Paracelsus, the microcosm was man, as if combining in himself all the elements of the macrocosm or great world. This theory in turn reminds us of Swedenborg, who spoke and wrote so often about the Creator as the grand man of the omniverse containing all the elements of the microcosmic world. From the smallest unit of creation to the most gigantic, there is a spiraling, circular progression. Early explorers went west to get east, and so in the microcosmic world lies the answer to what the macrocosmos is like. Darwin said, "An organic being is a microcosm, a little universe, formed of a host of self, self-propagating organisms, inconceivably minute and numerous as the stars in heaven. A. Bronson Alcott, in 1877, said, "Matter in particle and planet, mind and macrocosm, is quick with spirit. So, we find matter manifesting and vibrating from minute to the monumental in various degrees, but spirit permeates through all. In the great world of the macrocosmos, is it not logical and entirely possible that there may exist worlds so large in comparison with ours that their individual total 29 masses may be millions upon millions of times that of Earth? And, if we grant that, is it not reasonable to say that in the small world of the microcosmos we will find the direct opposite? In other words, atomic worlds containing real intelligent beings who live, work and love even as we?" For some time now, scientists have been well aware of the fact that there is a universal pattern of form in the minute that is duplicated exactly in the colossal of creation. Space visitors have said, "It is not right that man should destroy his brother by utilizing the powerful forces of atomic energy, but the destruction you witness is minor, indeed, compared to the enormity of chaos created in the microcosmos by the release of such energy. When an atomic bomb is detonated, little microcosmic worlds containing created life are destroyed. Of course, these worlds are in other dimensions of time and space. What we think of as a minute may be the passing of a million years to the microcosmic citizen. Infinity covers a lot of territory, and we can easily have worlds and life so minute that we of age 5'8" cannot possibly see them with our organs of sight. If we accept this fact, we must also agree that there must be bigger worlds and bigger life forms. In fact, these forms could be so large that we couldn't possibly see them, and that brings us back to the microcosmos. In considering the present space visitations to Earth, we encounter saucer occupants similar to ourselves in size and form. We do not find spacemen coming into Earth's atmosphere landing their craft on a pinhead, or saucer pilots so large that they displace all the water in the Atlantic Ocean if they decide to take a dive. The reason certain space people are here and not other inhabitants of the cosmos is because our infinite father has sent those brothers to us who are most nearly like ourselves in appearance and bodily size. After all, contact is difficult enough in a corporeal world without adding to the problem by sending a highly developed being who would have to announce the universal doctrine to us from that pin head or lovingly lead us like a swift in Lilliput. The space friends here now may be far ahead of us in spiritual development, but they are probably more nearly like us than other dwellers in the cosmos. Before the consideration of similarities existing between matter and energy from the subatomic, microcosmic, through the astronomical, macro, cosmic, levels is discussed, it is important to conceive of what matter and energy are. Very recently, it was taught in our universities that most of the atom as well as most of the starry universe was empty space. Now, finally, physicists are uncovering the facts that show matter and energy to be the same thing, though they cannot really understand how such a situation can exist. Their facts confuse their theories, and they find themselves forced into retaining theories they now know to be inconsistent with the facts, for lack of any better theories. 31. Empty space is a dead concept, for where is the no starlight? Yes, even starlight is matter and exerts pressure. Science has discovered that the famous little particle called an electron sometimes exhibits itself more as a particle and sometimes more as a wave. This is true also of the other so-called particles of the atom and of the universe. A particle can be an electron, other atomic particles, an atom, a moon, a planet, a sun, a solar system, a galaxy, a super-galaxy, and so on, ad infinitum. All creations, particles, in the universe are similar because 1. All of them discharge energy. This might be considered as reference to fields of force, emission of rays, waves, frequencies, vibrations and forces. Briefly then, how can one picture something having both particle and wave properties at the same time? It is done by thinking of them as shells within shells. Some of these shells are visible to the eye as the Earth's crust, the layers of an onion, the skin of the body, or the wheels within wheels of saucers. Some are visible with instruments which have determined the wave nature of electrons and other particles which emit quanta of energy. Some are detected by special photography as the four known fields of vibration around the human body and the atomic and molecular structures of various crystalline bodies as obtained by the British physicist, W. L. Bragg. The kind of motion that these shells exhibit determines what the effect of that energy is to be. Heat, for example, is a wave pattern made up of a series of particles given off in quanta by an electron. It might be called pure energy moving with a peculiar kind of motion. The nature of the motion determines the effect produced, which can be any of the following: non-visible light, visible light measured as heat, or cold light. Remember that visibility and invisibility and the sensations of heat and cold are only sensations of the physical structure. Thus the real meaning of the term light is far beyond what is visible to the eyes. The term light is used to designate the wave nature of all matter, its energy and its motion. 2. In order for bodies continually to discharge energy, they must continually absorb a new supply of energy. Thus the universe consists of constant interchange of energy resulting in 3. A perpetual rhythmic expansion and contraction. For example, it is only possible for comets to travel at their terrific speeds for long periods of time because they are constantly replenishing their energy through their tail, and this energy is from a sun. Now let us consider the tremendous likenesses exhibited by primary bodies, beginning with the smallest we can detect, the subatomic. Subatomic particles, and when we say particle, we must think of particle, wave, for the two concepts are inseparable in speaking of basic structure, are to be considered in this discussion as particles that science can know only indirectly by their behavior. Thus, heat energy given off by an electron might be comparable to satellites of the electron. Thus the electron gives off electromagnetic radiation, which produces effects on varying portions of the spectrum depending on the kind of motion. Perhaps these particles are those quanta of electromagnetic radiation which have been called photons and/or gamma rays. These rays, like X-rays, are without an electrical charge and are therefore not deflected in electric or magnetic fields. Gamma rays are electromagnetic radiation of very short wavelength and high energy. Photons or energy vary in their velocity and thus energy according to the kind of radiation to which the matter emitting the photons is subjected. If the radiation is in the high frequency end of the spectrum, then the photons will have a higher energy. In other words, the energy of the photons emitted by an electron subjected to electromagnetic radiation is related to the energy of the radiation, but the energy is emitted in distinct quanta. Photons are too small to detect experimentally in the high-frequency portion of the spectrum. They are only detected in that part of the spectrum below visible light. Photons or gamma rays by interaction with atomic nuclei have been converted into pairs of electrons and positrons, positively charged electrons. This materialization is a good example of the equivalence of matter, mass, and energy. Scientists have divided the subatomic particles into two classes. The first class consists of particles which cannot occupy the same shell or energy level. These include the proton, electron, positron, neutrino and mu mesons. The second class consists of particles which can occupy the same energy level. Photons, gravitons, and pi mesons belong to this class. The graviton is the unit of gravitational energy. According to the unified field theory, gravity is just another aspect of electromagnetism, like light, radio waves and other forms of electromagnetic radiation. Professor Vaclav Levity of Indiana University Graduate Institute of Applied Mathematics recently achieved solutions to mathematical equations in Einstein's latest unified field theory that revolutionize our concepts of energy, motion and matter. Dr. Levity's solutions to the Einstein equations reveal that electromagnetism is the basis of the universe, which goes beyond Einstein's attempt to unify gravitation and electromagnetism, the twin forces in which he believes the universe manifests itself. If Dirac's solution is correct, the basis of all cosmic forces, gravitation as well as matter and energy, is built up of an all-pervading, all-embracing mathematical field. These theories will lead to the discovery of cosmic forces not even suspected today. Gravitation is not the basis of everything, but electromagnetism is. Everything, including man, owes its existence to its electromagnetic force field. So, called gravity is created by the vortex of the particle itself and is related to the density and also the size of the vortex or electromagnetic field. Thus the gravity exhibited by a sub-atomic particle may be greater than suspected at the present time. It is present as pressure toward the center of the field. Therefore, one might think of gravity as acting inward at right angles to the energy levels or shells. And to make a broader statement, we might say that all the particles of the second class are acting at right angles to the spherical energy levels or shells, but the photons act outward and are given off as various forms of electromagnetic energy. Both photons and gravitons modify the motion of their respective nuclear body in its role as a satellite to some larger body. As electrons revolve about atomic nuclei in energy levels, so photons revolve around electronic nuclei, and when they are subjected to energy they are emitted as electromagnetic energy in waves, the effect of which depends on their motion. For the possible effects, glance at a chart of the electromagnetic spectrum. The effects may be anywhere from heat on the far left, through radio waves, infrared, visible light, ultraviolet, and X rays, to the high energy gamma rays just before the section of the spectrum designated secondary cosmic rays. Gravitons are particles acting inward, pulling from the center due to the pressure therein resulting from the expansion and contraction of the magnetic field, which is a field of electrically charged motion. Due to the particular kind of motion of the electron in the magnetic field, no sensation of electricity is felt. The latter results when the negatively charged electrons move through the positively charged solution called atmosphere with a frictional motion. Atmosphere, as used here, refers to the electromagnetic field, not just air. The particles that go to make up the ethers can be thought of as sub-atomic matter, and as you sub lower than that we go out of existence as far as the world of matter measurable is concerned. Now let us consider atomic structure. Although we could probably be more nearly correct if we regarded all the so-called particles as motion rather than substance, we retain the physicists' terminology in order that those who are acquainted somewhat with atomic physics can judge for themselves what is stated. The old classical idea of an atom consisting simply of a positive nucleus with negative point, like electrons revolving rapidly around it, is now found to be quite inadequate. Also, we are not so certain that there is a tremendous amount of empty space between these entities. For sub-atomic matter would indicate satellites of satellites to a micro-infinity separated by the infinite light of the Creator, known to the Kabbalists as Ein Sof, the limitless light. The newer theory of wave mechanics envisions the electron as a standing wave undulating to and fro. When the electron emits energy, its energy level or shell is contracted accordingly. When it absorbs energy, the shell is expanded. The apparent mass depends on its speed. Since the electron rotates, we must now conceive of this undulating more or less spherical shell rotating or spinning. This rotation is brought about by the effect of flux set up by the charged solution in which the electron is found. The rotation brings about polarity, magnetism, gravity, electricity, etc. Now, before we leave this discussion of what an electron is, let's include in our concept what would give rise to this more or less circular standing wave undulating to and fro. This can also be thought of as a manifestation of the vortex or electromagnetic field. This effect can be pictured by imagining the wave effect of two series of vertical rows of fish passing uniformly between each other at a 90-degree angle and then backing you. Would not this motion in rhythm give the effect of a spherical undulating wave? In the case of the atom, these waves are produced by parallel lines of force passing between each other at right angles with a rhythmic breathing resulting from the positive, negative strain. The positive lines of force are composed of positively charged particles, and the negative lines of force of negative particles intersect them at right angles, forming a flux effect. This intersection, when the lines are of equal density and vibration, forms an atom consisting of protons and electrons and an electromagnetic field. It is because these two kinds of lines of force have different speeds that scientists have recently discovered that the speed of light is not constant at 186,000 miles per second. Several months ago, a naval research engineer said he and four associates photographed a spot of light moving across a cathode ray tube at 202,000 miles per second, faster than the recognized speed of light. Perpendicular to these intersecting lines of force are other parallel lines of force which extend infinitely throughout all space. These have an extremely high rate of vibration but no motion as to direction. This is what is meant by space intelligences when they say, light does not travel, light is. These lines of force establish polarity and the resulting effects. They are the creative causation force of the creative intelligence, and the insulating force between successive electron shells. They make possible creation of new particles and add to the rotation of particles already existing by spiral induction and partial penetration. It is this force which condenses and escapes invisibly as a neutrino when an atom is split. It is the part of the atom which undergoes a resurrection. Physicists discovered the neutrino, which they believe to have a mass of less than 1/2,000th of the mass of an electron, from the fact that in the nuclear process of a neutron being converted into a proton and an electron there was some missing spin energy. The neutrino was postulated as the carrier of this energy. It carries no electric charge, but an idea of its character might be more easily grasped by realizing that a beam of neutrinos would travel through lead of almost infinite thickness with no decrease in intensity. Indeed, the neutrino, which physicists can't see as they have seen tracks of other nuclear particles on photographic film, appears to be the creative light force of the infinite Father. The limitless light, the light that is. It is the balancing force of the omniverse. In regard to the nucleus of the atom, physicists are considering various theories, trying to understand what holds its protons and neutrons together in the nucleus, since electrically like forces repel. A qualitative answer is given by certain of the mesons, but quantitative measurements await further development, because the forces acting between a meson and proton or neutron are said to be approximately 1,000 times stronger than the forces acting between an electron and electric field. However, in keeping with the differences in the speed of phenomena within the atom, could we not say that the vortical currents were sufficiently strong to keep the nuclear matter concentrated in a comparatively small area regardless of its apparent mass relationships? In other words, if gravity is recognized as a force acting inward as a result of vortical currents of the atom, the weights and measures developed in the vortical currents of the Earth have no intrinsic value of themselves when referring to the atom. Information received by their BSRA states, if one atom were ever truly smashed, your whole system would be turned into a supersolar, nothing but light radiation, many millions of times brighter than your sun. No wonder space visitors are concerned over our atomic experiments. Before we leave the subject of atomic structure, let's glance at the idea of the inverted atom. Physicists have found short-lived particles in all cases that are the electrical opposites of the prevalent particles in our atomic structure. Some of these, including the newly found antiproton, have been found in cosmic rays. These are evidently the particles that form atoms built with negative nuclei and positive satellites. Substances constructed of such atoms would be identical except that they would be invisible to our physical senses, which were constructed to recognize substance formed of atoms having positive nuclei and negative satellites. Physical vision is sensitive only to positive light reflecting from negative substance on a negative planet. Inner perceptions see colors resulting from negative light. Neither reflections from negative substance or reflections from positive substance are reality, and neither are they visions, they are only reflections from reality. Now let us consider molecular structure.